Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Europe's B2B SaaS Sales Podcast. My name is Patrick, and I'm very happy to welcome Firas Rashid today. Hi, Firas.
Hey, Patrick. How are you?
Good, thanks. Nice to meet you, and very excited for the discussion. So Firas is the CEO and founder of Hook, a SaaS company out of London, who is building technology for customer success teams, right, Firas? I did get that right. So it's a bit different from where we had a few head of our customer success leaders already in our podcast as well. They most of the time do some selling too, right? Mostly upselling though, and getting the licenses. Getting people to reuse the license and stay with the company forever, which is a very important function and has become more and more important over the years. But before I talk too much here, Firas, let's dive right in. As usual, with the two tactical tips, I hand over to you.
Yeah, so clearly I'm going to look at this from a customer success lens. My background was running customer success at AppDynamics at quite some scale. And so the two tips I'm going to offer to salespeople is, number one, figure out what your simple metrics are that relate to account growth, i.e. what are the leading indicators, very simply, that can show you whether or not a customer is going to spend more money. To give you an example, in my last job at AppDynamics, we found that as soon as a customer was above the 50% adoption mark, they were significantly more likely to not only renew, but to spend more money with us. And below that, they were likely to churn at the next opportunity. The second thing I would say to sales leaders is work with your CSM on figuring out how you can drive a joint motion that helps you achieve those simple metrics on the way to success. So, again, going back to my previous career, what I found was that when you can work hand in hand with customer success and with sales teams in order to find how to grow an account effectively, you're going to start to drive some pretty amazing tailwinds. So again, in the role that I did at AppDynamics, we ended up bringing in about 38% of all of our sales through leads that the customer success team found. And we did that using the leading indicators that we had found that worked.
Awesome. Awesome tips, Firas. Also, the leading indicator, I have heard of it from, I think, Mark Roberts, who is pushing that kind of, that you need to find this KPI. You say leading indicator because there is an indicator, not a lacking, but a lagging indicator is basically LTV, right? How long or how often your customers renew, but very often that's way too late. And the one you just mentioned, you know, much earlier, like 50% of active users, or as you said, a bit slightly differently. How long did that take to find that indicator? Yeah, how easy was it to find something?
Yeah, it's a good question. This is all I now do for a living. Hook plugs into our customers' products and CRM, and we out of the box tell them what their leading indicators were. And we often meet with customers every day that are facing this problem. Now, what's interesting is everyone tries to overcomplicate it. So what I built in my last job was we ended up spending, in the end, about $2 million to get there, to find a whole array of leading indicators and to find and to build a machine learning way of being able to predict renewals. But actually, the first iteration, which was that number that I gave to you, all we did was we wrote down, we had a list of renewals. Historically, we had a list of upsells, and we built an Excel sheet where we had a column where we manually entered what their level of adoption was, what level of utilization they had in terms of users, and a whole bunch of other metrics. And we actually just did it manually. It took us probably 2 weeks to come up with the first answer, which was renewing or upselling customers at 57% and non-renewings at 29%. And at some point around the 50% mark, they're more likely to spend more money with you. We then spent a couple of years refining that to get to a way more detailed theory. As I mentioned, that ended up costing quite a lot in the end. But what it started to tell us was that sentiment made like zero difference to whether or not someone was going to stay. But every single metric we looked at in terms of engagement, i.e. are they buying more services from us? Are they speaking to salespeople? Are they attending marketing events? Are they using the product properly? Are they using new features in the product? Each one of those had a correlation to it. So yeah, I think you can do it quickly and effectively. And that would probably be, you know, my most direct advice, which is go out there, do it today. Don't make it overcomplicated. Don't hire data people if you don't have them. Just start with like Excel and numbers so that you have a starting point to understand where to focus.
Wow, interesting. And especially what you said, Firoz, and maybe confirm whether that's correct. So you said sentiment is not a good predictor for renewals. So, and with sentiment, I guess you mean how the project team maybe from the other side feels about it, or how people, or the feedback you get like personally. Is that the sentiment, or NPS, I guess, probably also partially sentiment? What else?
Yeah, I think how people feel about it, NPS. Often people run customer satisfaction surveys. I think all of those are really risky approaches to use in B2B SaaS to look at retention or growth. I think most of your listeners have been in sales where you have deals which you focus on sentiment, and you realize when you look at the actual metrics around it that the deal is unlikely. And I think that this shift is also happening in customer success, simply because you know, you rely on sentiment. Companies don't buy on sentiment. They don't renew on sentiment. They don't churn on sentiment. What they make buying decisions on is, am I getting value from a product, and what will be the cost of change? And that's hard to sum up in sentiment. The other problem is that sentiment works really well in B2C, because if you don't like TikTok, you can move to Snapchat and you're the decision maker. The problem in B2B is there are multiple decision makers and the users generally aren't the decision maker. We actually find, by the way, in certain products where the user is the decision maker, if the buyer uses the product, then it makes them more likely to renew, for example. But that's rare that in all cases you're looking at that. So the problem with sentiment is it can give you a red flag. When I've done this in my past career, we actually found that some of the customers that were getting the most value out of the product were the ones that showed lower sentiment. And it's because they know your bugs. They know what they need to try and get out of it. They know what your competitors do, and they're really close to it. And actually what most companies will find is that some of the earliest and newest customers of your product that aren't yet getting full value out of it, maybe the happiest, because they're still on a phase of it's a novelty period. They don't know what the full capabilities are, and so on and so forth. So yeah, beware sentiment for sure.
Wow, such a good, so interesting, Firoz, because I'm really, you know, that was exactly the experience I had the opposite way. In my first SaaS company, we had a very, very low usage of the tool. And we hid the usage, by the way, from the users. Huh? We didn't want to show them, or we didn't want to show the project team, because otherwise they could, I mean, totally makes no sense at first. But then to get a good feeling ourselves, we just surveyed the project managers, who obviously liked the tool. I mean, they implemented it, right? So they didn't want to be like, yeah, I'm implemented something that is actually completely not working. But that brought us to a completely different path. And I find it very interesting that you say like sentiment is generally not something they should rely on. And exactly, it's the opposite way. So when people, the most critical people, they're mostly like not that positive.
Yeah, I mean, we use product behavior primarily. We also use some Zoom meeting data. And we find from that data alone, we have an accuracy of prediction of renewals about 80 to 93%. We're also starting to predict upsells, and we're somewhere similar, which shows you the strength of like the power of looking at behavioral data rather than sentiment data. I also think, by the way, that it's important to share that data with the customers, because I actually think the end customer is the ultimate CSM. They have the exact same desire to get the outcomes that you do, including potentially spending more money with the company because you want to drive more value from there. I'll give you an example back from my days I used to run IT operations at Credit Suisse, actually not far from where you are. And when we used to do changes to make people use new products, we used to find ways to be able to pull out usage reporting so that I, as a manager, could go and see whether or not my team was using the product effectively. And we did a rollout of a big monitoring solution, and it took us a while to get that usage data in. And so before we even got the usage data in, I just told my team that I had access to the usage data and I was looking at it every day. And that statement alone ended up shifting everyone to moving into it, because people were starting to go, we know that our managers expect them to do it, to look at our usage. We know that we're going to be flagged up if we don't transition to it. We better go and check out what this new tool is and what it does. So even the knowledge that we were checking usage data started to get teams on board to go to transitioning it. So I think actually, as a software vendor, the more that you kind of pull that away from users and the harder you make it, the harder you make it for managers to transform their own teams. In other examples, I've actually run incentivization campaigns. So at AppDynamics, when we were building out the customer success team, we used to find that we had big accounts where we'd landed big deals. The implementation was great, but people hadn't caught on to how to use the product yet. And so to fix that, we used to go in and offer a pair of AirPods to the team that created the best, or the person that created the best dashboards in AppDynamics. And you'd find within a couple of weeks, you were going from 5, 10, 15 users to 150 users, because you'd suddenly kind of captured people's minds to start thinking about what they could do. There was an incentive, there was competition. So I think that data is like super key.
Interesting. And so, Firas, as a customer success team, you have way too low usage numbers, for instance, not enough active users. Are there any like two or three actions that you can share that you would take as a customer success team that have most impact on the usage?
Yeah, I think there's an interesting view I have, which kind of combines with the core of the messages in the podcast that you usually think about, which is, I think that customer success teams underutilize sales tips, tricks, processes compared to what they can. And actually, I think sometimes that's driven a little bit of fear of customer success teams coming across as sales teams. I've been there. I've been a customer success leader now for coming up to 6 years. And I know that we were very scared of being seen as a sales team and very focused on the team as driving value. I actually think that's like one of the biggest things that holds customer success teams back. Like, if you work in customer success, if you can pivot yourself to being a revenue focused team, you're going to be brought to the center of your organization. When I started Hook, we obviously had to go through the process of building out sales. And as part of that, I personally had to learn things like how to prospect. And I'd actually never written a prospect email with the level of thought that I now had to do. You had to look at, what are the subject lines? What happens if you have two words? What happens if you capitalize things? How do you send it? What should be the first line? How do you sign off the email? And all of these things, I look back at my customer success career and I'm like, these are the things that I needed to know. Because often the reason that people aren't using the product is you're missing a champion and you need to approach a champion that might be disengaged in an account because they bought the product, they've moved on, or the person's left and you need to go. So I think the first thing is start to look at ways in which sales teams behave to capture people, either users or buyers of products, so that you can start to make them understand what the value of your product is. And that includes prospecting, it includes how to demo, it includes how to measure value from them. And don't be afraid of it. These things are out there, they're just not called customer success things. because I think that they're still worming their way into our world. The second thing that I would say is look at ways of incentivizing that adoption. And do it early. So we generally, as a customer success team within our own product, usually incentivize the highest usage of the product within the first 30 days. And we'll just send a gift out, but we find that it starts to make it a bit competitive. And the earlier that you can get it done, the better. We generally find within our own data, when we look at customers, if people have a bad onboarding experience, it becomes much harder for them to recover later. So find ways for people to incentivize usage, adoption, in whatever circumstance it works. I mean, we've done everything from lunches to just celebrating a thank you to doing road shows and so on. I think the last thing I would do is make sure that there's just a really clear handover as part of the sales process as you go to and forward from sales, in understanding what the drivers were for people buying the product. Because again, you're going to have to go back to that sometimes when people disengage and understand what was the driver and how do I get them back again. As a product founder, it's very easy for me to forget that. And as you know, it's easy in sales just to go on to demoing features. Actually, what you're doing is selling value and delivering value. So being really tight on that in the feedback loop is really important.
Cool. Awesome input, Firas. Especially, the second one, incentivize the first 30 days of usage. So you incentivize the users to use it. And yeah, I think you mentioned one or two, but what examples, a few more examples on how you can do that? Because I find it a very interesting approach, definitely.
Yeah, the one we do at Hook is we just say the person that logs in for the most number of days in the first 30 days out of the account will get a gift. And usually we use a gifting platform and we'll send a bottle of wine or something like that. And we usually share the data on a weekly basis, and then we share it with the champion as well so that they know what's happening. We realize in doing that, by the way, that our product is different. Our product requires customer success people to think differently, because all of a sudden everything's turning into data and insights rather than some of the softer stuff that they may have been used to before. And so part of that journey includes encouraging people to go back to the platform and forcing kind of the first 30 days of usage.
Cool. Awesome. I have to definitely bring that in as cool. Thanks, Firas. That's a great tip. Now, you mentioned the handover customer success sales. Usually also a pain point in many organizations, right? Because sales is just like, there we go, you can get it. And what would you suggest there to cover? Obviously, something that you already said is like the key drivers or the key pain points, gains that you're solving. Basically, what are the expectations of the customers? What else is that? Usually, a meeting that you would suggest for sales and customer success people to hold, or any other ideas there?
Yeah, in my career, what I've seen is the most successful salespeople are the ones that stay on an account for the following 3, maybe even 6 months on larger deals. And the reason that happens is that the salespeople are able to follow through on the value that they've sold, make sure that it's delivered, and they can go back and resell to an account. Anyone who works in SaaS knows that the revenue that exists in SaaS software isn't on the land, it's on the expand. And going even further, the huge shift that we're seeing now is SaaS companies are valued based upon their net revenue, no longer on their sales figures. The only way you can get to 200x revenue like Snowflake is by getting to 180% net retained revenue. It's irrelevant of your sales figure. So I think actually a softer approach where salespeople stay longer on deals is important, even if it's informal. And I don't think it's purely just a case of a handover where the document is sent and there's a meeting and that's that. But I do, I have a very strong view about when you do that handover, what that should be. We actually had a process called a joint success plan in AppDynamics, where everybody involved, so the project manager, the customer success team, the salesperson, would build out a plan of, for each item of value, how were they going to measure it and what were the tracks on both sides. But what was most important is that we measured those using common metrics. So we actually said, how many licenses should we deploy within a certain period of time? How many people should be using the product and in which team should they be? How do we measure value and what should that dollar amount for value be over a certain period of time? And then we had a list of mutually agreed contacts, and those contacts were across each of the different teams. And that was really helpful because it meant that it wasn't just a case of this team is trying to save money in this area. It was this team is trying to achieve this use case. And to do that, they need to deploy these licenses to these people and have them using the product. And this is the contact if things go wrong. And it was easy to see when things weren't going right because those numbers weren't hit. I think when you move away from the metrics, that's when things start to get dangerous because it's actually really difficult to know whether things are going well and or not well. And as we all know in the sales side, the metrics were calculated in order to drive a business case in the first place. So I'd say focus on the numbers and focus on the contacts, but also the salesperson, the more that you can encourage them to spend time on those campaigns after the deals close, the more that you're going to find success.
Probably interesting, depending a bit on the potential that these customers have afterwards. I mean, with enterprise customers, probably very, very much the case. You want them to maybe also be still involved. On the other hand, we have in sales, you know, you have like the hunter and the farmer profile, but that goes to your second tip, basically, that probably with farmer focused customer success and a hunter focused salesperson, they working together can probably achieve quite a lot, because the hunter would reach out to new potential people in the customer or even the customer success people, and then you can you can have a lot of success. Actually, in my first two years in my career, I always stayed with the customers in the like 6 months, as you said.
But as you said as well,
our customer success team was very much a team who said we are not salespeople, and they really felt proud saying we are not salespeople, which I never understood, because customer success is, for me, it's a department.
Yeah, I've been there, and the more that now I am a salesperson as a founder, the more that I actually look at the customer success function, and I think that if you shy away from being a revenue function, you're going to be deprioritizing your own company. It's that simple. Now, we've got this amazing opportunity that's opened up in the world because the combination of digital transformation, which has driven the acceleration of SaaS, and the fact that net retained revenue has become the most important software for SaaS companies, means that that we as customer success leaders can either say we're going to sit on top of that and say we own the net retained revenue number, and we're going to figure out how to sell and deliver value against that, and therefore we become the most important team in the software company, or we can avoid it, and therefore we don't become the most important team in the software company. And so, yeah, I'm with you. And I think, the techniques that you can learn from salespeople around discovery, around how to demo, around how to prospect, these are all of the things that just make you 10 times better at customer success. It's no longer a reactive function. It's now become a very clearly proactive function that has dollar-driven metrics that can show what your value is. I think that we've got this amazing opportunity to kind of work on transforming how customer success is perceived in our own companies from that.
I love it. Love it to see it from this way, Firas, indeed. To be like, as a head of customer success, if you start driving revenue yourself, you just make the whole department become way more important.
And at AppDynamics, that's what we did. We were bringing in 40% of the company's revenue in terms of sales from the customer success team. We'd increase the net revenue retention by 10 percentage points within the year that we were working on it. And it just meant that everyone looked at us and said, these guys are part of the go-to-market motion machine rather than a reactive firefighting function. And it gave us a lot of freedom to do what we want. We had our own versions of President's Club. We had our own version of awards and investment. And we had a lot of freedom to be able to do it because it was a revenue team.
Awesome. I want to get back to one point you said quickly about Snowflake, and they are incentivized by net retention. What was that exactly, Firas? That sounded really interesting.
Yeah, so if you look at the trends in the public markets now, what you find is that net retained revenue retention, so your percentage of how much your customer spends after 1 year, is now makes up about 50% of what investors will perceive of your valuation. So what that means is if your net retained revenue number is average, like 104, 105%, you're going to be valued at 10 to 20 times your revenue. If your number is like Snowflake at 178%, you're going to be valued at 200 times your revenue. And it's a really important thing to look at, because if you can figure out what are the leading indicators and behaviors to drive that, you can actually start to influence your company's public valuation, because what investors are looking at is, if you've got 1.8 times spend from every customer every year, within 3 or 4 years, you're turning that into 7 or 8 times without any work and without any sales. And so they preempt that in the valuation. And I think this is the shift that's happening right now. I mean, investors used to ask about your net revenue number on meeting number 7. Now they ask about it on meeting number 1. The first customer success hire used to be at Series C. Now it's at seed stage. In fact, we hired our CSM before we even had revenue, and you're finding that's quite a consistent thing for most companies. And you can't even raise a Series A without having a plan for retention and what happens with customer success.
I agree. We are hiring now 4 people for customer success. Not that we have yet 100 customers and everybody can, but we probably get there quite quickly as well, and want to be ready for Series A too. So
Yeah, it's amazing. Honestly, when I joined AppDynamics post-acquisition back in 2017, I think it was, and it was a different world. I mean, we had a reactive customer success function. Nobody really cared in the market at that time if what your retained revenue number was and if your customers were successful necessarily or not. And if you look at 5 years on, it's fundamentally shifted. It's now like the most important thing, as I mentioned.
I agree, yeah. Very interesting development. Firas, our time is up already, but honestly, this has been extremely valuable. Thanks a lot for joining the podcast and sharing your knowledge here.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Firas.